I live in an apartment farm where the windows in adjacent buildings meet at uncomfortably even angles. If the shades are all up and the lights are all on, you can see just about everything going on inside. Sometimes, late at night, I'll wake for a glass of water from the sink and notice my neighbour had his kitchen table in the unit across from me. The man is balding and middle-aged. He ordinarily wears a cream-coloured robe or some faded shade of red. He always has a glass of milk at the ready, joined occasionally by a fat cigar aimed for the skylight. His horn-rimmed glasses and neat 5 o'clock shadow are about as unremarkable as any other working Joe this side of New York and New Jersey state line. And yet, something about this guy always intrigued me. We never offer each other anything more than an awkward wave hello. We never attempt to speak. But some nights, I'll sit down in the kitchen too, with a glass of my own cold milk and a cigarette snuck from an old pack in the dresser. Sometimes, when you're feeling lonely, it's nice to see someone else is feeling lonely too. But one night, last month, my midnight companion gestured for me to join him. I didn't really know what to do. The wave was friendly and welcoming. There was no malice behind it. He didn't look annoyed by my staring. He just looked like he wanted to talk. I thought about the prospect for a couple of minutes, checked on the baby, kissed my wife goodnight, and put on a cream-coloured robe of my own. Then I stumbled down the stairs, out the atrium doors, and into the shivering cold autumn air. I found my new friend waiting in the lobby of his adjacent building. His bespeckled stare sent uncomfortable shivers up my spine. He waved me forward past the security guard, and I followed him wordlessly into the elevator. We waited in awkward silence for a moment before he pressed the button for 5, same as mine. "It's cold out there," I muttered. "Thought it might heat up over the weekend." The man smiled wanly in agreement. The elevator doors opened wide, and he stepped forward to proceed down the hall as the cream-robed sashayed behind him. I hesitated. "Relax, kid," the man chuckled. "The night guard saw you come in. I think you'll make it out of here alive." "Why did you want me to come over?" I asked. "I hope you didn't mind." He shrugged. "No. Looked like you wanted someone to talk to. Maybe I do too." I chuckled. "Either you've got great vision, or I'm just that transparent." Another sly smile. "Little bit of both. My name is Brandon. And you?" "Michael." He nodded. "And now we know each other, we're not strangers anymore. So how about it, Mike? One sleepless dad to another." I stepped out from behind the wide metal doors. "You got whiskey for that milk?" Brandon nodded. "Kahlua too." And with that, we bounded down the hall towards Unit 21C. The halls in the building were well lit and uniquely decorated with floral landscape paintings and glass vases that looked as though they held nothing inside. A scrubbed-up nurse walked past, just towards the end, and Brandon gave her a courteous nod. He fumbled for his keys before the door to his apartment opened. It was hard not to gasp. I was immediately greeted by the very essence of luxury. In the dining room, a magnificent chandelier dripped down from the ceiling to meet a luxurious oak table. In the den, Persian rugs lined at incessantly perfect right angles to cover scratch-free wood floors. Beautiful china sat behind spotless stained glass. A massive 70-inch LCD TV sat perched on the wall in between various gold and silver shaded baubles and picture frames. The place looked like the Ritz got trapped inside a tiny two-bed space. "Let's see about that Caucasian, Jackie," Brandon joked over his shoulder whilst heading for the liquor cabinet. "Big Lebowski, what a film. I've been hooked on the things ever since. I assume you want yours on the rocks?" I said that I did. Good man. Brendan returned with a speckled glass and a pair of large cigars. He set us up in the kitchen table before fussing through the cabinets for a pack of matches. After a moment, he grabbed a seat and lit his own in a perfect circular motion. Aim for the window. I nodded and went to work on my own. So, how can I help you, Brendan? A woman named Melissa came into my clinic today, he started. You're a doctor? He nodded solemnly. Melissa lost her husband and son in a car accident a few months back. Awful, I mumbled. Must be awful seeing that sort of thing every day. Brendan offered the same wan smile before taking a generous swig of his white Russian. She comes to my office for checkups, nothing more, he murmured through a cloud of smoke. The accident severed her spine. She will never walk again. But we still need to check the stitches and other various injuries for signs of infection. Our job is to make sure Melissa's horrifying situation does not get worse. That's all. I can't imagine staying positive, I added. It sounds exhausting. Brendan nodded. You don't. I was confused. Well, don't you have to? I asked. As a doctor, I mean. Isn't part of the goal to keep your patients feeling positive? You can wear a mask, he murmured. One of those perky masks that say all the right things. You know, be happy, make yourself happy, life will get better. The night is always darkest just before the dawn. You've read all the fortune cookies. You've heard the 1,000 cliches and adages and parables and crappy pop songs on the radio, extolling people to their best little selves, even when the sky is raining down crap on the only things that matter. Brennan coughed through his cigar and chuckled in disgust. So, you say stuff like that. I puffed my cigar wordlessly for a moment. Are you one of those nihilists? I joked. Like in the film? I'm a realist, he snapped angrily. Real enough to know that stupid stuff like that would not work with Melissa. I'm sorry, a dumb joke. What did you say to her? Brendan waved a hand as if to tell me it was all right. We keep it to the medicine. Don't wear the stitches. Make sure to take the right pain medication at the right times. Do you have a caretaker? If you don't have a caretaker assigned, the hospital can provide one for you. You know, stuff like that. Helps to avoid the deeper psychological questions. Those types are best left for the shrinks. I considered his comments for a second. Sounds cold. He nodded. Empathy is a dangerous thing. People can't be expected to hold all of the world's pain. Neither can doctors. There's just too much of it to go around. Brendan took another gulp of liquid courage. But this morning, Melissa tricked me. How'd she do that? We were talking about dreams. Vivid dreams can be an unfortunate side effect of concussions, unfortunately. So I needed to find a way to distinguish what is vivid and what is ordinary in her case. I asked for details about the dreams. And? Melissa told me she had a dream about her son. He was stuck inside a wall of water and she could not reach him. I gulped. Sounds pretty vivid. It sounded like something that needed a second opinion, likely a psych follow-up. I told her as much. She didn't take it well. How not well? Brendan sighed. She took a fork and stuck it into an open electrical outlet. Holy crap! Never seen anything like it in 20 years. The current from the wall slipped through the fork and into her already broken body. Melissa's heart stopped for exactly 100 seconds before we were able to get a crash cart into the room and revive her. That's horrible. I admit that I lost it a little bit. The mask slipped, so to speak. I had seen and treated this woman for months. I felt like I knew her. I knew her dreams even. And I felt like maybe the psych and the medicine and everything else had really helped her turn a corner. She talked about dating and having relations again. She talked about starting a life over. All of that work evaporated, at least in my mind, the moment she decided to kill herself. So, what did you do? I broke 1,000 protocols. I followed Melissa's case through the ER and into recovery. Later, during the day, she somehow regained consciousness, and I lied to her on call, just so I can sneak in to see her. Brandon took a long drag of his cigar. I wanted to shake her. I wanted to yell and scream and tell her what an idiot she was for wasting the small amount of time we get. I wanted to tell her there was nothing after this, and if there was, it sure as hell wouldn't be any better than what we got now. She lied to me. She lied to everyone. I was furious. Brandon got up to make another drink. I sense a butt coming. He nodded. But when I went to see Melissa, she was happy. That is the only way I can describe it. Happy? She sat there, in this hospital bed, covered in wires and IV lines head to toe, burn marks everywhere, looking like a damn horror show, with this big, dumb grin on her face. Brendan sighed and started to stir a cocktail. She told me she just had the best 100 seconds of her life. I laughed. I later regretted that. She told me she saw her husband. She saw her son too. They were playing on this beautiful white beach covered with pebbles in front of a massive blue ocean. Her little boy always loved to ride this fire red boogie board through the waves. She could see the kid clear as day, out in the surf, and every single wave would always be just the right height to bring him safely back to shore. He just looked so happy that Melissa felt at peace. Brandon sniffled a bit. She spoke to her husband as well. He was at the beach too. He forgave her for everything. He knew it was an accident. He knew they would be all together again. She just had to wait a little while. He paused. All of those aching feelings of guilt, misery, and heartache that she kept locked up inside her gut melted away as easily as those perfectly sized waves pushing up against the sand. Another pause. The best 100 seconds of her life. I consider the story, along with the last drops of my Caucasian and the stub of a cigar burning its way towards my fingertips. Brandon got up to stir a third drink. Something didn't seem right. Something still seemed missing. But why did Melissa try to kill herself at a hospital? Brandon looked longingly towards a picture frame rested up against the coffee maker. A younger man sat perched with a little girl hanging off his lap. Brandon dipped his fingers into his full glass and smiled sadly. Then he swirled his whole hand around slowly. Maybe she didn't want to die. How do you mean? He considered that for a moment. Maybe she just wanted to visit for a little while. He stopped stirring and looked at me with hopeful blue eyes. Hey, you have your cell phone, don't you? I told him that I did. And you saw the nurse next door? I nodded. Good. The next few moments passed faster than any in my life. I didn't anticipate what Brendan planned to do in front of me that night. That was stupid. I didn't see his hand reach out for the outlet. That was unlucky. But the sparks that flew through the air and the stomach-turning stench of burning skin painted an already perfectly pretty picture of what had happened. I turned to vomit, but Brendan stayed put in that motion, as if his arm was welded to the outlet, while bolts of white-hot electricity vibrated up and down his soaked hand. His heart stopped for 200 seconds. The police and EMS arrived in record time. The nurse next door rushed in at the sound of my screeching. But we were too late. We were all too late. My new friend died on his kitchen floor with a glass of good scotch still swimming by his side. He left behind a divorcee and no living children. A month later, and I can't bring myself to idolize or romanticize the guy. Truth be told, his actions were selfish, especially considering the trauma they put me and everyone else through. Sometimes, I hope Brendan got to see his beach one last time. And then sometimes, I still see his kitchen light on at night.